Is there always a rational explanation for the paranormal? Should one believe reports of unexplained phenomena? Unknown 9 Awakening is the action-adventure video game at the heart of the Unknown 9 narrative universe. You play as Haruna, an audacious heroine with the ability to venture into the fold, a mysterious dimension that overlaps our own. On her quest for powerful hidden knowledge, Haruna, who is portrayed by Anya Chalotra, will learn to master her unique connection to the fold, which allows her to channel its powers into our world. But such power does not go unnoticed. She quickly becomes the target of the Ascendants, a splinter faction of a secret society known as the Leap Year Society, who want to use the fold to alter the course of human history. Their confrontation will take them across the world, from the sands of Mauritania and perilous Indian jungles to the gothic landscapes of Portugal.
Get ready to dive into a mysterious parallel dimension. Unknown 9 Awakening releases on October 18th, 2024 for PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, Xbox One, Xbox Series X, and S, and PC. Pre-order your copy today and learn more about the Unknown 9 universe at unknown9.com/alien.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Beginning in the year 250 AD, the Mayan culture of Central America reached new heights of civilization. Marked by outstanding advancements in art, science, and architecture, this period is referred to as the Mayan Classic Period. Also during this time, modern scientists have identified a widespread cultural practice of cranial deformation, whose origins seem to be deeply rooted in humanity's past. From the many examples of art dated to this period, archaeologists have been able to form theories that link this practice within the Mayan civilization to a complex social hierarchy that incorporated two very different techniques for the shaping of their skulls. Some scientists cite the analysis of artistic depictions from the period that some of these techniques were meant to imitate the skulls of sacred animals like the jaguar, which represented power. Other scientists point to the paintings of the god of fertility and the other members of the Mayan pantheon, which were drawn with similar cranial modifications. This practice of shaping skulls is not only found among the cultures of Central America. All over the world, cultures, both ancient and even in isolated pockets today, have practiced these techniques for shaping their skulls, as some say they were commanded by the gods long ago. This case file joined the theorists as they bang their heads and try to uncover the mystery of elongated skulls.
Welcome to Alien Theorist Theorizing Case File 173, Elongated Skulls. I'm Braden.
I'm Zell.
I'm Dan.
And I'm Andrew.
The boys are back in town. If you're listening to this, we have a second show out called Cosmic Channels, which is going to make its triumphant return for season 2, January 31st at 6:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. You can call in with your stories at 1-833-703-0424.
And you can search us on search Cosmic Channels on Spotify or wherever else you get podcasts. And check us out January 31st, where we're back in action.
We'll be back.
That show has picked up so much steam since it went live compared to when it was used to be a Patreon exclusive. Kind of crazy, actually.
It has progressed at a much more rapid pace than when we first started podcasting. That's for sure. Mm-hmm. Fun show, though. I can't wait to get started again.
Yeah.
Easy there, buddy, on that rye.
Yeah, drinking it straight. Big mistake.
For this case file, I had to throw on the hat so you couldn't see my giant skull.
Yeah.
We're mostly going to be talking about Zell's giant head. Like, that's mostly what we're going to talk about.
We're thinking the same thing.
I was like, there's one thing I have to do today, and that's wear a hat.
I have four pages of notes about Zell's head.
Well, I will propose this. Have any of you ever seen Dan's skull, Sans head? Or Sans hat.
That is true.
I thought his hat was fused to his head. I thought we were discussing this. Not a thing.
It is. Yep.
Yeah.
That is, in fact, his hair.
Yeah, it just grows like that.
It just grows. It grows a rim and a ATT logo out of his forehead.
It actually unscrews, like the top. Like there's a thing up there. It just unscrews, pops open, and then I pop in more storage space.
That's where your RAM's located?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's got like a Lego head.
Yeah.
Oh, so
it used to be way bigger, but I switched to SSD and now now I can put it a little bit
normal
smaller.
Size.
So you got SSD skull and you have what you put in where your appendix was removed. You're slowly turning full RoboCop here.
That's my new, that's my graphics card.
Right. Oh, that's the GPU right down.
Everything down looks right. More real.
Elongated skulls is a really interesting one because we find them all the time.
One of us has history, one. It's a pretty big deal.
All over the world, through different cultures, we find these elongated skulls.
On every continent, all across the timeline of humanity, there seems to be cranial deformation of some type everywhere around the world. So it leads you down theories that we'll get to later, but
well, and the one thing you're going to have to question yourself, and we'll go over this case file, is, did all these people come up with the idea to deform their heads at birth? Or is this some sort of wide arcing, you know, culture? Like, much like there's pyramids on every continent, you find these things everywhere. Is there a common source for these ancient cultures trying to elongate the skull?
I like that.
Yeah, you guys are absolutely correct that these skulls, these elongated skulls, are the fashion that they've been deformed in some way appear in every single continent. The very first ones were actually discovered in a town called Kahuna, Victoria, Australia in 1925. So we've known about these things for a relatively long time. When these were originally excavated, when they found these, and it was pretty much like they were pulled up when a farmer was like plowing out his field. And he pulled these things up. And then when scientists got a hold of these, a lot of them were like, this skull that looks nothing like we've ever seen before. It is obviously, or it looks human, has all the facial features. It's got teeth and it's got the eyeballs. It's got all that stuff, eye sockets, but it's huge. Like it's straight out the back, and there's no way that this could possibly be a Homo sapien, that it must be some type of long lost ancestor that we have not encountered before. But the thing was, around this time, we also started finding more ancient skulls in Africa. So we started finding more human skulls in Africa. And this is when the whole out of Africa theory started to take shape.
To me, like right away, looking at that, it's fascinating to me that you would find something like that in Australia and then find similar things in another continent, even because you look at Australia's like, you know, even they're like animals and stuff. They have so many unique things that are specifically to Australia and not found anywhere else in the world. So to find this thing here and then find similar things in other continents, to me is like a key.
I'm pretty sure, didn't they do that on purpose though? Like same thing with all the prisoners. They rounded up all the shitty animals and scary bugs and they're like, let's put them there too. Let's just exile all the scary shit and put it in Australia. That checks out to us.
This was the pre-diluvian race of humans that was very advanced that we're going to find shortly, I'm sure. They did that.
Yeah. Smart.
So when some scientists decided to argue that this was a long-lost ancestor, you know, a couple of either archaeologists or geologists chimed in and said, no, these can't possibly be super ancient because they were found in soil that was geologically recent. It was found in a layer of soil that it's like, it's not that, it wasn't found in like bedrock and like buried, you know, meters and meters down into the earth. They were found just plowed up out of the field. So it wasn't like these things were super, super old. But they did start finding more of these skulls. So it would be probably about a little more over 20 years later, they would find more of these skulls in this kind of same area of Australia, barely 100 kilometers from where they had found the first one. And you would find these and they would actually date these at this time because they had the ability or they had developed the technology to go ahead and date these a little bit more accurately with carbon dating. And they dated some of these skulls from what is known as the cow swamp specimens to about 9,000 to 13,000 years old. While they found other skulls, including the first ones that they had found, they dated those ones to be even older at about 14,000 years old.
I was going to say right around the time of the Younger Dryas.
Yeah, which we touched on in the last case file of like perhaps some, and there was perhaps a species that of advanced, advanced species that was, had advanced technology that was wiped out in these cataclysms in the Younger Dryas. And seeing
the ones
these skulls,
that built Göbekli Tepe.
Yeah, seeing perhaps these skulls now pop up at this and be dated around the same time, I'm like, you know, is it one of those things where you're like, okay, at what point do we start looking at these? These are all coincidences, or do we start saying like, okay, well, maybe these are a piece of a puzzle.
Yeah. Elongated piece of a puzzle.
Yeah. A long corner piece.
Yeah.
Right. So when they find these skulls, so they have they're like elongated brows, right? So it's like a cone head more or less.
It's not like a good look.
Long forehead to like a kind of a, not a pointed back, but like a, almost like a rounded, like, it's like if you put like a bunch of elastic band, like an elastic band on a balloon or something, it kind of like bulges out the back.
Sure.
That's pretty much what they're looking like.
And some scientists said that the features in these skulls had like a distinctive sloping forehead and the prominent brow ridges, which are very similar to the ancient human species Homo erectus. Right. So
I got a few friends that look like that too. Mr. Cologne's got one of those.
Couple of hangarounds from the Younger Dryas period.
Junior Dryas.
But the Homo erectus species had gone extinct around 140,000 years ago. At least that's what the fossil record tells us so far. Modern humans appear around 160,000 years ago. Us, modern humans, Homo sapiens sapien. Now, double sapien. More sapien than the other sapiens. So now, not only in Australia do you start finding these skulls, but then scientists later started finding these skulls in other parts of the world. So some of the probably the best known, because you'll see them on TV shows, you see them all the times, you'll see examples of these elongated skulls from South America, South and Central America. So you had some of the earliest discovered deformed skulls in South America were found in Peru, and they dated these ones from 7,000 to 6,000 BCE. And you found that a vast majority of these, when they excavated them, they had some Peruvian remains that they said as far as 90% of some of the digs that they have that they've excavated had these deformities. They had these uniform deformations of the skull. So they also found a group of skulls that are about 2,500 years ago that they found in the 1920s. And these ones are known as the Paracas skulls, which are probably the ones you'll hear that are probably the most popular is the Paracas skulls. These ones were discovered by archaeologist Julio Citeo. And these ones were so elongated that these are the ones that you'll see as an example of these cannot possibly be fully human because of just how strange that they look. When you look at them, you're just, there's no way that these people can be 100% human because it is so bizarre in the features of the skull.
And I think these ones fascinate me the most, not because of their sheer just shocking when you look at them, hashtag look it up, but the fact that like in Peru around this time, 2,500 years ago, like they are creating the Nazca lines, which are, you know, these giant hieroglyphs on mountainsides that you could only really appreciate from the sky.
Right.
Right. And you know, they of landing strips, what appear to be like a runway. You see all these things popping up around that time in Peru as well. So it's very interesting, the timing of these skulls, like of when they're dated to.
And these skulls, like you can go search on the internet for, you can see all different types of elongated skulls, but the ones from Paracas especially look normal. Like they look like they grew like that. Where a lot, some of the other ones you can find in like in North America, a lot of like the native.
Yeah, they look like trash. Well, they look terrible. Well,
no, they just look like they were not natural. They look like they were purposely formed that way. Like you can see.
Yeah, they're not uniform. They looked fucked up.
Here's my question, Dan, real quick. Were there any depictions of these? Like, because when I think of elongated skulls, the ones that pop to mind are obviously like Akhenaten, Nefertiti, Tutankhamun.
Yep. Sure.
Because we saw those pictures, right?
Right.
Before we saw those hieroglyphs and the statues and whatnot of the Egyptian pharaoh and his family, you know, was the only other time we saw these elongated skulls from the actual skulls that they dug up? Or have these been depicted anywhere else other than Egypt?
No, are you talking about like in art? Or are you talking about like we've seen them?
In art, painting, sculptures, statues, I mean, that type of shit.
The civilizations that practiced, you know, the deforming the skull, like, artificial deforming of the skull or artificial cranial deformation is the term for it, is those civilizations existed well into like the 1700s, 1800s, like they were still around. So we have seen pictures of Native American, like specifically the Chinookan people of the Pacific Northwest. There are pictures of them having, you know, the practices that they had while they were doing skulls. We've had illustrations from Spanish conquistadors and missionaries that visited with these tribes and have seen the practices of them. So they have actual pictures and or what they've drawn of people with deformed skulls. And even we have actual photos where some places, it's, you know, as late as like the 19, I'm not sure, into the 1900s, where you had, in the Democratic Republic of Congo, you still had tribes that practiced skull binding. Like it's still a thing.
So that's why maybe it wasn't as alarming when they found these skulls. You know what I mean? Like it wasn't as like, right. Cause when you hear things about Akhenaten right away, what do people think? He was the fucking alien pharaoh. He was the heretic pharaoh.
The alien king.
You know what I mean? He was the alien king.
Right.
You know what I mean? So like when people were finding these skulls, they were like, holy fuck, I found an alien skull. Everybody look at this fucking thing.
No, not right away. No, they started with the scientific, like, oh, we have a lost branch of, you know, like humanity, like a different, something different that we haven't found yet. That's how it started. But yeah, like Egyptians had them in art. I'm pretty sure like mines and stuff depict people with elongated skulls as well. So like, but these are from different.
The Huns did it, didn't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Skull binding, like the actual practice of skull binding has been known to human civilization for quite a long time. Like they knew about it. It's just like, some of these ones, when the first ones they find, it's like 1925 and on, it's kind of, they find these ones that are just severely, really deformed. Like it's like,
Do you imagine if like this skull binding, these elongated skulls ended up going out like fucking tribal tattoos or like those guys that stretch their ears, like
everyone,
you know, 20 years
doing
later,
it.
You're like, fuck, why the fuck did I elongate my skull? Like it's no longer in style. You look like a dickhead.
Yeah. It's not, yeah.
There's no coming back from that.
You can elongate your own skull though. Your parents would have to do it to you when you're birth. When your skull is still soft. But the weird thing about elongated skulls, I find with all these in different cultures and from different times and the timeline of humanity, they all seem to figure it out on their own, in their own way to do it. So the question that you start to hear is like, okay, well, like why over all these different millennia and why different cultures with different gods and different everything. Why the head?
You know, well, like, it's like they're modeling it after something. Like they want to be something. You know what I mean?
That is the theory. Like, okay, well, like the sky people, like, or something. Like you hear the stories, like, oh, they're modeling after something they seen, something that was so profound that was like godlike, right? So that's the theory. Is like they seen something or something interacted that was godlike. It had a long head, and they're like, you know what we could do to prove symbol of power? Try and look more like that dude.
Well, here's my question, Andrew. This is for you because you might be in a better position.
I doubt it, but okay, go for it.
Probably not, but better than
us.
Well, Andrew Dan would be better equipped. Say you have a child today and you practice this. What does that do to like the brain development? Do you think it hinders the brain development moving forward? Kid going to be fucked up a little?
It's interesting you asked that, because what I thought right away, because you think any malformations of the skull as an adult usually are caused by trauma,
yeah,
or tumors, right? And you think about that, like what we're looking for. Okay, so no, we're not dealing with trauma here. So we're dealing with a malformation, which like what could mimic that, and you can think maybe tumors, right? And what we worry about with tumors is it's basically displacing the space in between dendrites, right? Yeah. So it's furthering the fucking space between the neurons. So you're not firing properly. So you get your deficits, right? So you'll get your, you know, you could lose feeling or control or half the side of your body, whatever, laundry list of symptoms. But I don't know if the malforming the skull would displace the dendrites at all. You know what I mean? I'm wondering it like, for me, it's your brain is pretty much fucking rubber when you're a child, right? Like your right. Fontanelle, everybody's got that soft spot in their skull, right? The skull's not completely formed yet, right? So there's that space. So doing it slowly over a long period of time, I don't think so.
Well, if you think about it, if they found that, because you said like 80% in Peru in that excavation had elongated skulls. So if they were that proficient in stretching people's skulls, but all of their people that they stretched just ended up being right. They couldn't function as a high level functioning person.
Fuck.
So if you had 80% of your population like that, how could you be how could your civilization progress for so long? So it makes me think that it doesn't. Like you could be just as intelligent by stretching your skull up from a young age is what it seems like.
Right. So I will say that the majority of the cranial deformations that scientists have found when they do surveys of these elongated skulls is that they are a product of what they call tabular cranial modification. And so tabular is because there's two types. So the first type, tabular, is when you kind of flatten out the front and the back. So this sometimes can be actually unintentional. Is what scientists say. Mm. And it's it can be a product of like how they rear their child or how they transport their children, because some of the cranial deformations, especially like in nomadic tribes of Native Americans, for example, you have them kind of on the boards. Like they have like their children, like they put the children on the board on their back, and they have something to kind of keep their head, like a board to like keep their head from flapping around. Cause I mean, you don't want your kids like,
can't do that.
Their
gigantic, you don't
want
to fuck
head
up their skull.
Right. You don't want them fucking up their neck, or you don't want them moving around or
you
stuff
don't
want like to
break
that
their neck. Yeah.
I wonder, you think about it though, is I wonder if there was any link within like vision issues or vision loss, because stretching the skull like that would definitely put pressure on the optic nerve. Like it'd have to.
Well, they said that they do have, they probably, those who experience cranial deformation do have the characteristic of larger, like the eye sockets are wider, like a little bit wider, because you just stretch it back, the eye sockets get wider. So they're saying that they might have had a problem with like slightly bulging eyes,
like which that would make sense happened. Because you're compensating for the pressure on the fucking optic right. nerve.
And so
like it's yeah. tough to say too, because we do have evidence that Akhenaten, Nefertiti, and Tutankhamun were like fucking riddled with diseases, but that could have been from generations
yeah,
and generations.
Like Akhenaten was made of Nefertiti, and Nefertiti was like a sister, and
yeah,
Tutankhamun was
inbreeders
yeah,
and
whatever. It's not healthy. That shit was fucked up back then. But the weird thing is like you mentioned Akhenaten and Nefertiti, and I looked into them, and a lot of art that we have from that period that has been excavated is it does depict them with the elongated skulls, and you, like you said, the exaggerated feminine figures, the kind of the wide hips, and I mean that's what you hear about all the time. So there's all these kind of rumors about what possibly, you know, was going on there.
We don't really know that. Like, we're not 100% certain that we found Akhenaten's remains,
right?
If I understand correctly, right? Mm-hmm. Like we think we did, but we don't know.
Right, they're not 100% sure. I don't think. One of the explanations is they said that perhaps they did have the elongated skulls, because that can happen. That's like, it can naturally form. Maybe they have like a little bit of an elongated skull or something like that. There are certain medical conditions that can cause like an exaggerated lengthening of the skull, not a huge cranial deformation, but perhaps the art period of the time, they said, like the art style, apparently the Amarna art style is what they used, or what was transitioning or happening during Akhenaten's reign into Tutankhamun's, the entire art style of how they represented their pharaohs and the ruling class kind of changed.
I know that they theorize that he probably suffered from Marfan syndrome, which would explain like the abnormally long limbs and skinny, you know,
what's that syndrome?
Fingers and Marfan syndrome.
And it just makes your appendages grow really long, or
so it's people who are tall are prone to it. We had a really tall guy in our class named Dan, and we were reading about the syndromes going through it in school, and the teacher's like, the Marfan syndrome, people normally suffer from this, this, and this. And like my really good buddy who's taking paramedic school with me is Dan. And I'm like, holy fuck. I'm like, Dan's got Marfan syndrome. I'm like, he's Dan, the Marfan man. And then we've been working this job for 8 years, and everybody still calls him Dan, the Marfan man. It's perfect.
Does that syndrome allow transfer to the skull as well? Or is that mainly?
Well, it's a disease of the connective tissue. If I remember correctly, I'll Google it really quick. But so there is connective tissue in the skull, but I don't know.
Not to that extent, I don't think.
Like, what's the one, hydrocephaly, where like the brain fluid fills up the skull and it like swells in children, but that's usually fatal early on. It'll kill
you, right? Yeah, you won't make it past.
So if you're like, if your skull, your skull swells and like nothing, you just can't live.
Puts pressure on all the blood vessels and you fucking die.
Right. So on that note, I know people always have asked this before, so we're going to bring this in right here, because there was for a while, there's something called the Star Child Skull. Mm-hmm. And so the guy's name was Lloyd Pye. We've talked about it before. He was a big Bigfoot.
All roads lead to Bigfoot.
But he was a proponent of the Star Child Skull, which was a skull that was like extremely large for its size. Like, it seemed way bigger than it should be. So for a long time, they're like, oh, the Star Child skull is an alien hybrid. And I mean, all roads point to it was not, but maybe aliens are more human than we think. Because it was eventually like a dentist, like they examined the teeth. They're like, yeah, this is from a four and a half or 5-year-old child. And he had this hydrocephaly. And it makes sense, because if you could look at that, and you can look at other cases of children skulls who have died because of this. It's pretty much exactly the same.
Yeah. So like I was saying before, so you have the two types of artificial cranial deformation. You have tabular, which can happen unintentionally, like I said. But the other one is definitely what the scientists conclude as intentional, which is the circumferential modification, where this one is like you actually take, and you can look up pictures of this, because probably most of the pictures you'll find are the ones from Central African tribes, where they take like an actual band of rope or something and they tie it around the cranium of a newly born child. And that's how they go ahead and produce the modifications. So now here's the weird thing, which I thought was really interesting, is that you would think that you would find one of those techniques, like one of those ways to deform the skull. Like, you think you would find those perhaps like in one area, like you'd find it one area and that would be the dominant, or, you know, the most popular way of cr- cranial artificial cranial deformation. But what scientists have seen across, you know, across the continents in these areas is that you will find both techniques used within relatively close proximity of each other.
Right.
You will see some using tabular, and you'll see others using circumferential information. So, for example, they had the Aymara culture, in which were prominent in the highland areas near Tiwakan. Tiwanaku in Brazil, and they used the circumferential compression. While at the same time, you had the coastal areas of Peru where they practiced tabular deformations, which was the more popular thing, which I thought that was fascinating because it's like, well,
so same time frame, different techniques, close proximity.
Right. It wasn't just like one, in some of these areas, you don't just see like one started here and then it spread out. You don't see it spread out from like the most populous center from like a metropolis or something, a central cultural center, you know, a cultural center of a civilization and then spread out. It's more like you can get different ones to produce the same product, essentially.
It's, to me, that's mind-boggling because to me, that points to, like, I would say that they've seen, like, that points to me that they're replicating something they've seen, right? And they don't know how, so they're, like, their cultures that are close by are just doing it and working on it at the same time, separate from each other. So it's like they've seen something and they're trying to mimic it with their kids.
Yeah, either they've seen it recently or it's been passed down from whoever started it, seen something, and now they're like, they just do it because it's culture. But at one point, they must have been something like, you know what's a good idea? We should stretch our heads to look like that. Or I just don't know how it starts. Like, how does that, who's the first person to be like, no, it's a great idea. I'm going to wrap my baby's head and make it long.
Okay. I mean, somebody had the idea to go get a fucking barbed wire tattoo across his bicep for the first time.
Yeah, but you can
shit passed on.
But a barbed wire tattoo doesn't take 3 years to do.
It was, people do stupid shit.
Yeah, but you can get,
I don't know. That was a cool thing back then.
Yeah, but you can get rid of a barbed wire tattoo. You can't get rid of a fucking elongated skull.
You can now. That's
now
relatively
saying,
new
like,
technology.
That's some weird shit to me where I'm like, when I think back to these ancient cultures, I bet it has something to do with being like of high status or like looking like a god. And I'm like, right,
when
away,
you think about it, all these cultures, like when you bring religion back with all the main religions around the world, it all goes down back to the same fucking thing. You know what I mean? It everybody all goes back to worshiping the sun or whatever. You know what I mean? Like
same story.
It's so weird to me that everything, all these cultures all have pyramids. All these cultures all kind of somewhat have the same base for their religion. And now all these motherfuckers want weird shaped heads. Like it's bizarre.
Why?
Man.
Yeah. Why?
It's bizarre.
The other thing that I found fascinating is that it's like looking at like our intelligence level based, you know, compared to chimpanzees is because we can have like we have more room for our brains, right? Like we can have more brain mass, right? Is that correct, Andrew? Like that's,
Dan would maybe know better, maybe, but
there's a little bit more to it than that.
More than that, okay, I would say that sure. Too. Cause you would say like, look at a chihuahua is not smarter or is not dumber than a fucking German shepherd. You know what I mean? There's a big disparity.
It's our brain. It's our, what's the front? It's the
frontal,
the
frontal cortex.
The cortex. That's like the place of the brain that allows us to reason.
I don't think it matters because we have more size for it. I just think we've had to be able to evolve it.
Size probably has a little something to do with it as well. Because if a chimpanzee had a different style of brain, but in the same skull, it'd probably be smarter. So it's like how our brains have evolved.
Well, yeah, but there's fucking animals that have brains twice the size of ours and outthink
that's
them.
What I'm saying though, that's like what's brain saying, like if a chimpanzee had, if you change a chimpanzee's brain to have more of a like a cortex like a human but it was the same size, it'd be much smarter. But yeah, it doesn't have to, not just necessarily the size of the brain.
What I'm trying to get at is, and this might be way wrong because this is from a really kooky guy, LA Marzulli.
God, I love that last name.
Great name.
Yeah, I fucking love it.
I'll get into some more of him in After Hours. But one of the things he was saying in his research was that in the elongated skulls that they found that were like elongated, you know, by this tabular or the other method, it doesn't increase the capacity of the skull. Like, it doesn't increase the weight.
The volume,
It's just the skull is shaped differently. But in some of these Paracas skulls, the area for the brain is way larger, and the skulls are heavier than that of, like, a human counterpart.
Yeah, and that's not just him saying that. I mean, he does go down some crazy theories, but, like, Brian Forrester also, I mean, he's been on the Paracas skulls for a long time, but yeah, they claim that in many of the Paracas skulls found, not all of them, but, you know, some of them that are found, like, the skulls, they say, are like 25% heavier and 20% more, like, volume in, like, skull volume. Actually, it's a bigger skull than a human counterpart of the same size.
One, even than the, like, human elongated skulls that we know are, like, manipulated through these fashions.
Yeah, so I mean, so some of them, like, yeah, you have an elongated skull, but it's the same size as a human head. Like, if you go measure out the surface area, it's longer instead of round.
We got fucking Brainiac, we got fucking Megamind, we got the leader, three smart dudes.
Yep.
Yeah.
MODOK, that guy's got a fucking huge head.
Before we get, because that, the Paracas skulls and Brian Forrester and that theory, that will take us to the end of the file. So let's have a quick beer break. We'll be right back and we'll continue going down that route. Be right back. Okay, so we left off talking, brought it back. I started the episode, we talked about the Paracas skulls. We said we'd bring it back. So yeah, now
we're talking about the size and brain capacity. And I'm saying, like, if you look at our frontal cortex that we've said, you know, gives us our, you know, our super smart powers of being smarter than everything. Imagine if you had room for that to be, you know, even larger than it is.
It's a little bit bigger.
Another
20% or so.
Yeah. Well, let's say, like, if the skulls are 20% bigger, let's say even a 10% increase in what we have now, like, what would that unlock for us?
I mean, but, like, so, like, are we just playing along that we think that size matters in this situation?
Well, we all know that you want to impose that for sure.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Know that's what I'm saying.
It's not the size, it's the motion in the dendrites.
Exactly. That's what I'm trying to say. But no, you know what I mean? Like, are we playing along that to buy into this guy's theory? Because,
I mean, this theory is, we're kind of making this up as we go, I think, right here.
We have this in normal humans today. You have, like, listen, you think me and Shaq have the same size of fucking brain? Not a goddamn chance. There's no way.
Yeah, but you have all the parts.
There's definitely records of people and examples of people functioning with at least half a brain.
There's stroke survivors that are fucking, have like 70% to 50% of fucking brain function that are gone back to their ability, like their previous abilities completely.
Okay, well, let's entertain the idea that, say, whatever part of
that's our... That's why I'm asking, are we entertaining?
We're entertaining the idea that if we had 25, if say the part of our brain that makes us human, makes us be able to reason and, you know, manipulate our environment was 25% bigger, would that make us superheroes?
Super villains, if we know our track records here.
That's true.
It's always super villains have the bigger heads.
You can listen to Freddie Silva do some lectures where he talks about ancient cultures before the Younger Dryas that had control of all the elements and could move things telepathically with their minds. And that's how he accounts for the Great Pyramids being built and stuff like that. Is this culture that was basically mostly wiped out during the Younger Dryas, who then passed on as much knowledge as they could to the hunter-gatherer human sapien around the time.
Then, like, we're saying that those people, perhaps that some of these elongated skulls may have been that
lost race.
And for me, like, and I would buy more into the fact that these are maybe extraterrestrial beings that have bigger brains because they're from a different planet and different, like, species in general than just having bigger brains because they have more knowledge. But, like, who knows? Maybe they evolved over years, like, because we know that civilization's a lot older than we thought it was. Maybe they evolved to make more fucking space like Dan did in their brain. I don't know. Ran out of fucking gigabytes or whatever the fuck you call it.
Yeah, perhaps. Yep. I mean, if it's a different like species, like an alien species or like a hybrid species. Their brain might be 25% bigger, but also like way different, just like ours to a chimp. So it would like allow them to like understand or manipulate stuff way easier than we could.
Well, because like just like when we were talking earlier with chimps and humans, like it ties in more to do with like genetics than it does with size, with how your brain functions, right?
Yeah.
And like brain makeup, like different regions of the brain and what they do and all that stuff. And
so maybe these species just have an ability to, like, their genetics are just more predisposed to being fucking almighty and all knowing.
Perhaps. Now we can take this theory a little bit farther. So like Brian Forster, he spent a lot of time examining these skulls, and you know, in 2014 they did an initial DNA test, and you know, everyone jumped on board because they're like, oh, the unknown blah 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 could be aliens. Turns out now they've done another test in 2018, three different universities, and they presented these skulls as mummies. They didn't really give any more information. They said these are mummies, you know, do a cranial examination, check for DNA and all the stuff that whatever you can do, whatever you can find in this, let's check for it. So they had like, they tested 18 skulls, six skulls confirmed no results. Like the DNA was too degraded. They couldn't really find anything out of them, but 12 confirmed results. And what Brian Forster says is four skulls were, so this is something new that I've just learned while doing research for this that I had no idea. Haplogroups. You know what those are? So haplogroup is just like when they do genetic testing, it could tell like what part of the world your ancestors came from.
I learned all about this when I did my 23andMe.
Yeah. So you would know, it was like your haplogroup would be, you're from your ancestors from Lebanon. So you could find out what
question about that first, because I know he does talk about the haplogroups, but does he go into talking about like, because I know Andrew, like the 23andMe tests, I'm not sure how precise the ones that Brian Forster and them use, but I know we're reading a couple articles about it because I am always suspicious of genetic testing companies, but it's like, it's not necessarily a exact telling where it's from. It only gives you like a percentage, like a likelihood of where it's from. Did they use something more precise?
Yeah, like they basically, I don't know how much I buy into it either, but they basically like can track down to where my haplogroup originated from.
Or it's like a percentage of like, what it's like a, they give you like a probability, like it's probably from here, what those percentages are of like where they are. It's usually like, if you read the fine print, it's like,
I'd have to look into the fine print, but when I click on the fucking, like when I look at like my paternal haplogroup I'm looking at right now, it's saying like, this is your haplogroup. My halo haplogroup is R-FGC11293.
And that's,
and like, that's where I got my son's name. Like I'm from
haplogroup. That's it. R-0133.
Well, I'm from the Un Nile dynasty of Nile of the Nine Hostages. He was this like Irish king on my dad's side. And that's where I got my kid's name from.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, I thought so too.
Yeah, so I had no idea about haplogroups. I've never wanted to give my DNA because I feel like they're going to clone me or something. And like, sure. I don't know what they do with that shit when they
perfectly swap. Legitimate
clone
fear.
Us duds though. Like this is the fucking genetic dumps over here.
Like, hey, I don't know what they're doing with the DNA, but I don't trust
cloning.
Them.
We need some average build and height guys with receding hairlines. That's our mediocre underachievers. This is what we need.
If they're trying to put a database together of all human DNA in case the species gets wiped out and then some super advanced AI can rebuild us on a different planet.
We'll probably be able to order like clone Andrews soon.
Yeah, because you need guys to work in the fucking boiler room of the Titanic.
Yeah, you know what? Going down. I would fucking really like to get a reroll. So
maybe we get better stats.
100%. Yeah, maybe we get better.
Yeah, fucking shafted. I feel like I took the worst of both sides and put it together and made me like fucking bullshit.
All right, so what were you talking about, the haplogroups?
Okay, I was just saying that haplogroups is something new I learned. And I mean, I don't know. I didn't dissect the entire analysis. I'm just taking Brian Forster at his word, so you can go do your own research about him. And this is his theory, though. So Brian Forster, working with the Peruvian government, managed to secure some of these skulls for testing, send them out to labs, tell them they're mummies. And so four skulls came back as haplogroup B with some, you know, B is the main one. So B is like native North American, more or less. You can get more specific. I'm sure if you look at it, to like what exactly what part. So four of those skulls were haplogroup B, and eight, according to these universities that tested them, eight were not native, being haplogroups U2E, H1A, or H2, or T2B. And all those are pretty much from Syria to the Caspian Sea and to the Black Sea, like this little triangle. So you're like, okay. So, I mean, the original theory of humanity is, yeah, out of Africa, slowly migrating across, you know, across Southeast Asia and up through Russia. And then like 14,000 years ago, they got to North America and then eventually all the way down to South America. So now his theory, I mean, originally they thought aliens in 2014, but since recanted to be, no, this is equally as interesting because it may rewrite, you know, human expansion. And so his theory is this haplogroup, or these like these elongated skulls are from this haplogroup from the Caspian Sea area, so Syria, Black Sea, Caspian Sea, kind of in that area. And in that area, I guess, like red hair and like blue eyes was like a common trait. And a lot of these Paracas skulls are found with red hair still attached to the skull. And some people are like, oh, that's just part of like, you know, the decomposition, the hair changed color. And then what he's saying is that's been examined and no hair is hair and it's red hair. So he is saying that these elongated skulls somehow either they sailed or like, obviously it's hard to tell, but they got to Paracas, Peru. And that's where they took their cranial deformations. If it was a deformation or if that was just, because the theory will progress here in a second, they took that to Peru and then it migrated. The culture started in Peru and it's kind of worked its way up through North America. And that's his theory. So that leads us now, I know everyone who looks into the elongated skulls, you get to this theory. And that is like, if you go to like Syria and stuff, like, you know, we're getting to like, that's like a cradle of, that's a lot of like, that's a cradle of civilization.
Babylon, fucking Mesopotamia.
Right? Like a lot of ancient stuff there.
The Tigris and the Euphrates.
The stories of, the fictional stories of the Anunnaki perhaps, but also like a lot of people talk of like the Nephilim and like, you know, the Book of Enoch and like when the giants were here, they were gods and they mated with human females and the elongated skulls, they are alien is, you know, a lot of theories, but also half human. So that's where you get to like, you know, the alien hybrids, like this is the, you know, the progenitor race of humanity. And so that's where I'm going to leave it right there. So that's pretty much that whole theory in a nutshell, all based on Forrester's theory of these elongated skulls in Paracas came from this area in the Middle East. Thoughts?
And while he's done the, like, Brian's done the most research on it, he's probably the most into it out there. With this case file, I had a really difficult time because a lot of avenues that I was going down, like L.A., what's his name? L.A. Mazzarelli and guys like this. They have...
Mazzulli.
As Mazzulli. They have no... Like, L.A. Mazzulli has no... Like, he's not a historian. He doesn't have a degree.
You tell me with a name like that, the guy's not doesn't have any credentials?
Right? He has no credentials. And then, like,
he's not Dr. Mazzulli?
I listened to an interview with him, and he's claiming all this research. And the interviewer asks, like, well, why don't you publish your findings to get peer reviewed? And he goes, I'm not interested in that because I'm not in their little club. So no one wants to hear what I have to say. And I'm like, okay, fair enough. At that point, I'm like, okay, it's a little red flag for me. Fair enough. But then as you go further, he starts really shifting into like some flat earth shit where he's like, these are hiding God. This is like all this are from, it's from God. And all of this is like hiding the fact that there's gods and a God. And then he starts talking about the fucking dragon God. And I'm like, what the fuck? I was like, this all started with elongated skulls and it's going fucking madness.
What is it? You got to tie it in for us quick. Summarize it. Dude, are they hiding God in the elongated part of their skull?
They're basically, they're the Nephilim. And they were like essentially angels that can control. But then he starts going that there's two entities in the universe, our all powerful God and this dragon entity. And this dragon entity is evil. And he was created by God, but God is just letting it play out. And dude, it's like I said, it's batshit crazy. And a lot of the elongated skull stuff would kind of get into this like religious stuff, which I didn't like. But I like the alien avenue that Brian Forrester takes and like his theory.
Well, Forrester stops. He does not mention alien in his newest interviews. He stops at these skulls. These Paracas people are similar because they found elongated skulls that are pretty much the same in this area of like the Caspian Sea. So it's not like they have found elongated skulls there as well. So his theory now through his DNA, the analysis of like three separate universities confirmed that this haplogroup is from this area. So this is his theory is that he's not leaning towards aliens. He's leaning to human expansion is maybe not how it's being taught. So that's where his theory ends. People pick up his theory. We're saying that, okay, well, there's elongated skulls in this area, like by Syria and stuff. I mean, now you start to mention the elongated skulls in like ancient Egypt and like around the world and pyramids all linking together. So the series, it starts snowballing, right? Now you're like, okay, well, there's elongated skulls. They mention them in Egypt. They mention them in Mayans. They both build pyramids. There's architecture similar in Peru and Egypt. So that's where the theory starts to unfold. And that's where we get into the theorizing bit because it's all theory at this point, but it's fun. It gets fun real quick. Dan, I know you got something building up in that.
I don't know, man. I think Dan sides with Dr. Mazzulli.
Yeah, dude, Dragon God sounds rad. I'm fucking on board. Let's go. I have a lot of questions. I am curious about a lot of things, especially some of the stuff that Forrester. Now, Brian Forrester, I will say, he has done probably more to make the Paracas skulls and the research that he's done with the skulls. He's done a lot of work to bring that out. And get that out into the public eye. And so people can look at it critically and take this stuff seriously about why. Because personally, for me, the elongated skulls is not so much about like how it happened. Like we know how they did it. Like we're reasonably sure, about 90% about how they did these cranial deformations, how they happened, what people were doing. We have art. We have all kinds of records about showing cranial deformation. It's more about like the why, and you guys have been talking about it the whole time. It's like why would you do this? It takes 1 to 3 years for them to to deform the skull because it when a child is born, from what I've researched, is like that is the prime time to deform the skull. It's still soft until they hit about 3 years,
man. Yeah,
right.
A nice soft spot. Right.
Recently, what I was reading is that recently, probably like the 80s or something like that, when they were telling. Child rearing experts were telling people, there was a small period in time where they were telling they were telling new parents to be like, okay, you should let your kids sleep on their stomach. That's the best way for them to sleep. And then they quickly put that back.
Don't do that.
They said, don't do that. Okay. And that changed season because you were having some problems. Yes. One of them was like SIDS, yes, and one of them was SIDS. Also you also get the asymmetrical forming of the skull because they would like turn their heads or something like that, and they would be like wah, like you get like one side of the head would be flatter than the other, and you would get that.
So that's what happened to me.
Yeah, that's what happened to you.
On my stomach. That's what fucking happened. That makes sense.
So we know about cranial deformation, these things, and it's like, but why? Why would they intentionally do this? Why would you do this to your child? Because it is obviously painful. It is probably causing them serious discomfort. Maybe not necessarily later in life, because once the bone is deformed and it's formed, that's it. It's just like, it's going to form like that. That's just going to happen. And then the brain kind of grows around that. It's rubber. whatever, it goes up into that. But why would you want to do this? Because the explanation paleontologists, anthropologists who have studied these cultural traditions, they have no real 100% sure explanation about why these people did this. It's always about, you know, the gods told them to do this, or some culture told them to do this, but they have no idea where it came from. They have theories, of course, the theories, and one of the most prominent ones you'll find is that they were a way for societies to identify nobles, because this was a practice that was a lot of the skulls that they found were buried.
See,
with
right there, that's to me like the sign of nobility. It's like, how does that become the sign of nobility? Is that elongated skulls? If it's not something you're mimicking from something that, like, imagine like an alien comes down, some alien species, and dazzle, like, just baffles everyone, makes
fucking
contact.
Ziggy Stardust comes down and then they leave. Music.
So the, all like that's that left is, you know, they're of just the stories of these people, and you start manipulating your child's skull, and you'd be like, my child is one of them. He's one of them. No, like, look, praise him.
You know what? I can buy into that because, like, you know, people evolve. That's normal. And we can tell people did evolve because they started just being like, you know what? I can look noble all by just being fucking fat. It's way easier. All I got to do is eat.
But also to Andrew's point, people do stupid stuff. Humans do really stupid things. And one of the explanations could possibly be that, because of the unintentional, because it can happen, artificial cranial deformation happens unintentionally, you know, when they were just carrying kids. And maybe they had some badass dude, warrior king, who was just had his head bound, had a giant fucked up skull because he had just slept wrong on his stomach for all the years when he was growing up, and his soft skull got all mashed up, but he was a fucking beast on the, you know, on the battlefield. And then that was the reason that they did it. You know?
Yeah, but again, Dan, like you said, the one thing that I can't buy into that direct conclusion is that we have the different
cultures.
We expand through all cultures, and we have different practices going on at the same time. If that was the case, where it's like from one person, you would see this like branching of it going out, like outwards from a circular, but you don't see that. You see it everywhere.
So yeah, and that's a perfectly valid question, is about they're still trying to figure out where exactly it came from, because you have it everywhere all over the world. You have it in places like Hungary, Korea, China, Mexico, Africa, everywhere. And their cultures have been doing this for thousands of years to make their heads larger and more elongated. And for what? Like, why? And the only thing that we know is that it is in 2018, there was a survey done by Matthew Velasco, who's a professor of anthropology at Cornell University. And he saw that the cranial deformation techniques that were used started to become standardized, at least in South America. He did a survey of the skulls in South America, and from around the same time. So probably about like the 1150 to like 1450 AD. And he saw a frequency increase in the standardization of the head shaping practices. So the heads became a lot more smoother. They became a lot more uniform. And he says that when you go and look at the context of the history of that area, there was a kind of collapse of some of the civilizations that were in the area. There was a lot of conflict. And he's saying that during this conflict and the collapse of the civilizations that had been prominent, and this was prior to the rise of the Inca civilization, like out of this conflict, the Inca civilization rose up. But he saw that the skulls all kind of happened to start using the same technique. So he's saying that the nobility in these things used it as a kind of way to promote social status or group cohesion. So you had the nobilities and these different cultures, when they started like melding or taking over each other, they kind of like, they did the skull shaping techniques, started to standardize, and you get these, like, they got really good at it. So you have this thing where it just happens. I don't know. Like,
okay, that's fine. But now I got to bring this back, because we talked about it earlier, and that's the large like these Paracas skulls being 25% larger, but also 60% heavier, like actually having more bone density. So there's something, I guess I learned this as well, called a sagittal suture, connecting the two like halves of your skull.
Yeah.
And pretty much all humans have, you can like in all skulls, they have like, it's like a little like jagged, like fracture line up your head. But in all of these ones that tested for the haplotype back to the Caspian Sea, do not have that in the skull. Wait, I know, Dan, I know. 1 second. They also have something called a foramen magnum, which is where the, I guess, the spine attaches to the head.
Yeah.
Well, we all have, everybody has
that. Yeah, but in these ones, it's in a different place is what they're saying. Oh, so his theory, and they're like, okay, yes, what's it called? Down with like the actual hemispheres of your skull fuse and you don't have the suture.
Yeah, that can happen. Yes.
But it's not.
That was what I was going to say.
Yeah. So it can happen. But in all of the skulls that tested back, all don't have it. So the theory goes that maybe these skulls are not deformed. This is maybe like an actual new species is what they're kind of trying to push here. And so if you take that back to Middle East, you know, Syria and all that stuff, and you have these, the old theories of the half gods, or like, you know, the Nephilim, like the gods came down, mated with human females, and maybe the gods did have this elongated skull. Maybe it was more pronounced or whatever. And this is like a slimmed down version. And that's where maybe these gods are, you know, there was a spanning civilization back, you know, pre-diluvian, erase from memory, go, you know, Hancock theory. And that's where all the theories come from. Cause it's weird. It is weird that these skulls are all bigger. They're all perfectly formed. They're all missing the suture between the hemispheres, and like where it connects to the spine, they're saying is different. So that's where a lot of people start drawing. They're like, okay, well this, now people get drawn in a little more.
Are they like, so when they compare these skulls, they're 100% human. They're not like, they couldn't be another race like those. What are the Florentis, you know what I mean? Like those smaller race of humans that we had or anything like that. Like we're 100% positive that these are human remains.
No, I don't think I would, if you asked him, he might say that they're not exactly Homo sapiens, but I don't know. So
the one thing I was like, is it, you know, could it be uncommon that there may be an outlying like culture of just who had like this deformity that was passed on? I mean, you look, there's
lots of inbreeding. Maybe.
Yes. I'm just thinking, I'm like, we have that, whatever that one, the blue people, right? Where there's so much inbreeding that like they have like a blue hue in their skin. They look fucking weird. I can't remember where they are.
West Virginia.
Or like,
is West it Virginia? Virginia?
I'm not joking. I'm not kidding. I know exactly what you're talking about.
They teach us about West Virginia.
It's real?
Yeah,
it's West Virginia. It's real.
Oh shit.
And then
it's in North America.
And you have like the people like in the Philippines or whatever, where their eyes have adapted for like diving underwater. Like they almost have like cat eyes or some shit. Right, like we have these outlying groups that have these deformities, but this one is just—it's so extreme.
Like it, like that last one you said that with the Fijians that can learn to like see in the water or whatever, like that is like, you know what I mean? That's evolving to a certain extent. What the fuck do you need this giant head for? That's what I need to understand.
Yeah.
Like, what is it? You know what I mean? Like for me, it's like, sign of nobility. It was sexy at the time. It was cool. It was like the fucking having a bush in the 80s. That was the thing to have. You wanted to have a bush.
Like it's so.
That's what?
Yeah. It's so strange because some of the practices, like it is, you will find this, like I said, it seems to be a sign of nobility. The what scientists have found is that a lot of the skull binding, the elongated skulls will be concentrated within what would have been like a metropolis of those cities, like a heavily populated. And as you radiate out, as you do excavations like farther out, you find the kind of the elongation of the skulls kind of falls off. That whole tradition, like it's not as practiced as much like outside of the cities. But to some places, it's extremely important to their culture. For example, I mentioned the Chinookan people, and they're mentioned in Lewis and Clark's journeys, their journals, when they met these people. And there's a point that it was so important to them to have their children to have these deformities, to have their skulls bound and shaped in such a way that they're, you know, flat up the front and in the back, that when they started having children with white men, like the women, like the rates of infanticide went on the rise because they were killing their children because the father wouldn't let them bind the heads of their kids. And they would, the women would rather have their children dead than not have their skulls deformed.
Crazy.
So hard to fathom.
I know there's people that are saying in our chats and stuff that, like, you know, maybe it's like tattooing and stuff and like body modifications we do now and stuff. But to me, it's like, you know, we see these outliers still today. Like, look at the Myanmar people who do the neck elongation. They don't really know where that came from. Like, they have ideas and stuff, but there is no real like definitive answer of why they started doing that. And like, it's a painful process. You lose the ability to like not be able to have your head stand up without the rings on. And I'm like, when you start to look at the neck getting long like that, it does have a very extraterrestrial look to it.
Yeah.
Right. And I start to think that these cultures were doing that to mimic something they saw. And I go back to like just all the artwork and stuff of depicting like flying saucers and, you know, men in masks,
spacesuits and shit,
the Nazca lines. I mean, these are all painting a picture in the past that we just kind of glaze over and we're like, well, maybe none of this is, it's all coincidence. But I'm like, it starts to me, I like look at it and I'm like, why not? Like, why is that so hard to believe that there might have been something that came that influenced all these cultures at a certain time?
I could get on board with that.
So sure. Like, there are lots of examples of body modification throughout history. We have things like Braden said, neck elongation. We've got Chinese foot binding. You have that happened.
That's a weird one.
Maybe there's ETs with little weird little feet. Like, and they thought that was cool. I don't know. You have people like, what's his name? I can't remember his real name, but the guy Stalking Cat, you probably saw him on talk shows where it's like, I'm going to modify my face to look like a cat. Like, I don't know why you would do that. You just really want to be a cat. Like, I don't know.
That seems like an intention thing. If it's just like, if they're outliers, like with just one or two people, but when you, like, if there's cat people all over the world, different, but like, this seems like different timelines of humanity. Different cultures all across the world, all binding heads or boarding their heads,
and doing it for a status thing.
Status. Right? Like this thing, for whatever reason, deforming your child's skull, probably a lot of kids died while doing it. I wouldn't be surprised. Like, you did it too tight.
Society that mimics status, right? Like, if you look like our society.
Do you think any more kids died from headbinding than normal attrition rates in those times?
I'm just saying some people would have killed their kids doing it, I'm sure.
There is one theory that perhaps this harkens back to a time where, because most of our traditions and things like that are what anthropologists and archaeologists will tell you, like most of our traditions kind of hark back to times when it's like we needed to do certain things to survive. Or perhaps something like that. So perhaps this was a way or a method for tribes when they started coming together or things like that. You could identify each other by easily looking at them. You know, if you have the modified head and you're like, hey, that guy's got a big fucking head like just like me, we're bros. You know, so. That could possibly be, that's one theory, is that perhaps they did this in order to be able to easily identify each other from long distances or for, you know, within the things to also, again, promote group cohesion, because people look similar. They tend to stick together.
If you look at how we treat like people of status in our culture, even today, if someone famous comes out and is wearing a new purse and they're like, this is the purse to get. Every fucking person runs out and get the
they do to their lips.
I got lip injections. Now I got to look like this because this famous person looks like this and we all need to look like this with my duck lips. Now we just do that because you're like, I want to be people to think that I'm like this person. It's literally like seeing someone of that status and then mimicking it. And it's
to me, everything's like that though. Like when you think about it, like tattoos started as like traditional fucking, you know what I mean, religious pieces or whatever the fuck it was. You know what I mean? And we have those all through all cultures. Right. And now they've evolved to being fashion statements and shit like that. Right. So we could think that maybe the elongating the skulls started as fucking tradition and stuff like that. And other people saw it and was like, well, that guy's cool. So I want to do it too.
I'm just saying, like, you have Beats headphones on. You are Beats better, the best brand? No, they're not.
No, I got them for $40 on ShopperSwap.
But what I'm saying is people buy them full price. There's better headphones, but because they're Beats and they're Dr. Dre and they're the thing to get, everyone gets them. Right. We're so influenced by this status. And when I look back at these civilizations in these ancient cultures, I don't think it was any different. I think they saw something that was powerful and was like, I need to be like this. I need to look like that in order to, you know, have what they have, even an inkling
of it. You'd think, for me in that situation, you'd think like the fucking people in power would put a ban on that then. Be like, listen, no, that's only for the fucking wealthy and the people who are in charge. You're not allowed to have it online.
Some anthropologists say that you do see that in some cultures, that there was like a ban put on some of them that said, you can't make your head like this.
You can't do that. You're not fucking cool. You can't sit with us. You don't have an elongated skull. What a fucking nerd.
Right? Who knows? Like maybe they would kill a child if they found it of like not a nobility class that they were doing that practice to.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Okay, so Braden's theory is that perhaps humanity around the world at different times had witnessed a being or something that, you know, led them to be like, well, that guy is God. So if I want to be God on earth, I got to have my head like that. So then maybe, you do it to your kid and your kid does it to his kid. You become a royal family. Now I could get on board with that.
And you start telling your kid you were one of the gods.
You're like a children
you
of God.
You came from the sky just like them. We're part of that race. One of the gods, just like them. And they're like, I'm a god.
You're going to have to do this to your kids, even though you're a god. Yeah. You still have to pass it down.
Yeah. Now, I think, that's a great theory and sound. And like, obviously, it's got to be a status thing. It has to, because it's around the world and like, it has to be a status thing. But maybe it wasn't aliens. Maybe this species of people who had elongated skulls, and that's why they don't have the suture. And that's like, they're different. And they don't have enough evidence yet to like branch out. And that's what Forrester and company are doing. So maybe that's it. And if nothing else, I think they might be onto something here with how humanity dispersed across the earth. So I pay more attention to this over the next, 5-10 years. Cause why would they match? If let's say the DNA is right and they are matching from Paracas and from over by the Caspian Sea, if that is like a true match and like the science on that ends up being sound, that like rewrites human history right there. Forget the aliens, forget everything. That's just like, whoa, maybe this was more like part, we were more, more global than we give ourselves credit for. And that's why you see the same type of interlocking like block structures in Egypt and in Peru, right? Like the same type of building technologies like around the world. So, I mean, that's my thought. I think maybe, if nothing else, this could maybe in the future rewrite a little human history, or it's a fucking alien Nephilim hybrid and those were the gods and they spread around the world instilling civilization. And that's why you see civilization around the world binding their heads as a status thing, because the aliens did it first. Andrew?
As much as I like to just play devil's advocate and question things, like I you know what I mean? For me, we all have this thing instilled in us to protect and love our children. You know what I mean? You love your children more than anything on the planet. That's the reason why human race has fucking survived as long as it has, because as we all know, kids are fucking useless and you have to protect them. You know what I mean? So like even in these ancient cultures, you'd know that, if somebody's head looked normal and then something happened to it and it became elongated through trauma or something like that, that's not fucking good. So they're going to these extensive measures to elongate these, your kids' skulls, right? Like it's not easy. You've been doing it over time. It's turned into tradition and stuff like that, but that's your child. You're putting your child somewhat at risk for, And to me, that makes me think like it's got to be something so fucking worth it. You know what I mean? Like, to them, this is the most important thing they could do. This is a gift they're giving to their child.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're doing their child a favor by elongating their skull. And brings me back to what Braden was saying. It's like they were modeling their fucking heads after something. And it's just, oh man, like, it's just too much for me. It doesn't help that I took this fucking THC spray. So I go to bed because my mind's flying a mile a minute. Woo! But like, just again, like connecting all the fucking dots, like Braden's board behind him. It's just all these places have the pyramids. You know, they've all depicted, you know, throughout in time, like, what's the first alien we saw? What's the first example of an alien we saw? Right? Those little gray bastards with the giant fucking heads. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, it's bizarre that all these different cultures that had no way of communicating with each other at this time, like covering vast distances, had these same practices. It's just, it's weird. I don't know what the fuck's going
on. It's wild.
My brain's not elongated enough to comprehend this.
Fair enough.
Simple as that.
Dan, I mean, you gave a lot of your theories already, but give a quick summary of all of the what you said.
I find it absolutely fascinating. It is one of these human traditions that is almost, it predates, definitely predates history, like written history. It's one of those cultural traditions that goes way, way back. Like, they see it. They said scientists have found that this artificial cranial deformation not only prevalent in Homo sapiens sapiens, but they also said that they found evidence in Neanderthal skulls as well. Like, Neanderthals were actually perhaps artificially deforming their children's skulls as well. So it has to be something that, like, I would say it's not something, like, to Andrew's point, I agree with that it is, you know, scientists agree that this is a time-intensive, physically, you know, perhaps traumatizing procedure that you're doing to your child. It takes 1 to 3 years. You have to constantly do it. You wake up in the morning, you're tying the kid's head up, like, you're doing all that stuff. You're constantly increasing pressure or whatever, probably painful. And you're doing this for something, and you know that you have to do it for some reason to either ensure your child's survival. You know, and so they, you know, to ensure your legacy, or that your children are going to be set for life. But I can also say that humans have done a lot of crazy shit in the past for weird reasons, you know, thinking this is what's going to keep us, you know, I'm not saying that maybe they're not wrong, but Aztecs were sacrificing humans. Peru too, most South American countries were doing human sacrifices, and they thought that they were stalling the apocalypse. Like,
oh, fuck. Maybe they were. And that's why all this shit's happening now.
Sure. Yeah. You know, 1,000 years, 500 years after they stopped doing it.
There's a slow down.
Slow burn. Too late to sacrifice conspiracy. We do it.
But this is genuinely a fascinating thing that scientists don't know where this tradition came from or why it's so completely widespread. You have cultures from all over the world, not necessarily all like pyramid building, maybe not pyramid building cultures, because they're like, this was prevalent in the Hunnish cultures and cultures that inhabited the Eurasian steppe area, where they didn't really have like buildings or permanent stuff like that. But it is strange, you know, and I would like to see good science put into this, whether if it hasn't already, you know. It's like, it is a very, you know, deeply studied thing. You know, I've seen, there's a lot of academic papers, a lot of academic literature about it, but it really, from the papers that I read, we don't know 100% where they got this from. There's no one thing that proves that we got it from here. So the alien theory is really as good a theory as anyone else, that they saw something that they perceived as powerful or you know, that they wanted to look like, to mimic. So that one is as good as any. And I could get on board with that theory, that they saw something and they thought, like, that's the way we need to do it. And only the noble people can do it. So, yeah. I think it's just really cool, and it needs more science done and should be looked, you know, more into. Keep an eye on it. You know, it's going to
pay attention.
Yeah.
Pay attention. It's definitely a cool worldwide topic. So. Awesome. Braden, you want to get into
space news? And the most exciting bit of space news I think Andrew has. So Andrew, why don't you bring in your space news?
Yeah, he's getting it. He's lining it up.
You're waiting.
here he is.
You're up, buddy.
Where's your riveting space news?
Your space news you were preaching about.
Brand new, hot off the presses. There's planets up there. There's stars. It's fucking dark. Nobody can hear you scream. It's pretty crazy.
He's not wrong.
Nope.
There you go.
Technically true.
Welcome. Case closed.
Welcome to space.
Yeah, where no one can hear you because you're in space. The Starlink satellites are now invisible to the naked eye, but astronomers still see them. We talked about this a couple months ago. The new Starlink satellites were bright as hell. They were actually making it hard for amateur astronomers to see past them as they passed in view. They were so bright. We then reported that they were being brought down and the next batch were being sent up with protective coating, non-reflective coating, so they wouldn't brighten up the night sky. And the new 415 satellites they've been significantly darkened. But some astronomers can still see them with good telescopes and stuff. But all in all, before when you saw the videos of them, I mean,
they were bright.
So I'm glad that it says something that they're like, yeah, we got to make a change right away. Like, this isn't cool.
Dude, not only do they gave them a coating, but they gave them like a sun visor to stop the reflection.
Yeah.
They call them visor sats. So they actually have this special angle of sun visor that limits the reflection back. So you can actually, they don't look like a giant line of dots spreading across the sky. Because it was, when they came out, it was crazy. They're like, that's Starlink? That's ridiculous. The whole sky was a line of satellites.
And bright, like the brightest star in the sky.
Yeah.
It looked like the fucking Jupiter and Mars every, whatever, the Bethlehem star, whatever, every day. Anyways, next up, astronomers find astonishing super Earth that's nearly as old as the universe. None of these things really surprise me anymore that he's finding these things. The only reason I brought this up is because if they found something in the like habitable zone, the Goldilocks zone, as we call it, that's as old as the universe, imagine what kind of technological advancements like sentient civilization could have now.
They call it Goldilocks zone because it's just right.
Just right, yes. Baby.
Just right. That's cool.
Not too hot. Not too cold.
Not too cold.
Not too cold.
Just right. Cool. It is a rocky planet, but I was thinking like something like that, man. Some of these finds, we just got to keep sending messages. Maybe one day they'll get back to us. I think it's too far for anything we've sent out to reach so far. But
yeah, it's probably thousands and thousands of light years. We can hope. Let's talk about the major component failure on the SLS, the Space Launch System, which is the rocket that's supposed to do the next trip to the moon and part of Project Artemis, had a major component failure. They were supposed to do like an engine test on Saturday and they postponed it because of a major component failure. Doesn't give a lot of details, but pretty much one of the largest pieces, they're like, component failure. Scrap the test or we're going to lose this $18 billion rocket. So, I mean, this Project Artemis was an ambitious, or they say 2024 boots on the moon.
Yeah.
But like, it's full of setbacks. So I mean, space targets are never accurate. So I wouldn't be surprised if the 2024 mission is a no-go, but it's a giant rocket, man. I wrote down here how big this fucking thing was.
Is it bigger than the Falcon Heavy?
I'm pretty sure it's the biggest rocket ever made. I could swear I wrote it down. Lost it.
That's all I had for space news. I don't know if you guys have anything else that you wanted to bring up.
Nope, those are the main ones. Space news over. Okay. I'm going to load up the Randomatron here. Ready for it? Take that as a yes.
Yes.
All This one has... This is telling me specific instructions to send to Dan.
Huh, that's new.
Dan, you should be getting it. Yeah, I don't know why it's saying right now. Send to Dan.
See, this is some weird gold ticker tape. I've never seen this before.
Illuminati confirmed.
What is that?
Huh. This is strange.
Did you get a ticket to a chocolate factory? Is that what it is?
Illuminati confirmed. Huh? It's only got two words on here. Seems to be it's got polar bears and 5G. Polar bears. And 5G.
Illuminati confirmed. Polar bears, 5G.
So polar bears. All right, polar bears. Polar bears live in the Arctic, and which we know is shrinking due to climate change.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard stories of, man, the polar bears, they're moving in. They're like taking over some of these northern towns, like invading people's spaces, like fucking rampaging through trucks into villages, you know, crashing food stores. It's no good.
Well, you know, we're talking about their melting habitat. We know that HAARP is located in Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone knows that HAARP is disrupting weather patterns by creating, you know, global warming and messing with the Earth's weather systems.
So if I remember correctly, Dan can probably correct me, but the Soviet Union were the first to build and use that technology, right? I think it was in the 80s.
That's true. They had a facility in Vasilorusk, and they performed, actually, in 2018, they performed a joint operation with the Chinese to test a high-frequency ionization of the atmosphere to actually change the weather patterns in an area.
Dude, I heard about this. That fucking place uses high-frequency radio waves, and it's the center of, like... a whole bunch. I think it was actually the start of 5G technology. They're controlling weather patterns. They could control minds. They could control minds of animals, perhaps.
Wait, we know that 5G is utilizing high frequency radio waves, these millimeter waves that have never been used ever before.
Holy fuck. Hear me out. This might be the THC talking, but Big Pepsi is using 5G to melt the ice caps to send polar bears to invade North America to destroy the world's supply of Coca-Cola.
Oh shit, dude. It gets even crazier than that now that I'm thinking about it. If you look up Coke stock prices right now, Coke stock prices are crumbling, and this is going to send that over the edge. If Coke's mascot is all of a sudden running wild all over North America, who's buying a Coke? Not me.
Who?
Not even Santa.
Who owns Coca-Cola? No idea.
Big soda.
Big soda.
Yeah. Everybody knows.
Boom.
Illuminati confirmed.
Well, that was quite a random thing out of the randomatron.
That's strange. Well, it is the randomatron. It is getting we've upgraded it to be more random. So
I'm surprised we made the connection from polar bears and their melting habitat to 5G towers. Manipulating the bees.
Boom. All right. Let's fucking wrap this episode up. Oh, we didn't talk about it before. God damn it.
No, I got it. I got it.
Theoretic of the week.
I got it. Yeah. Hold on. Give me 2 seconds. Talk. I got it. I screenshotted it. Boom. Here. Theoretic of the week. Melissa Sue Jeffries for her fucking unreal t-shirt design.
Oh, is that?
This one. I can't even see.
Oh, that one. Yeah. That's
that
a good one.
Right? Oh, yeah. Awesome.
Design a t-shirt with your four boys as aliens with nicknames Plasma, Cheeks, Mongoose, and was it Danza's Maester?
Yeah,
and the Maester. The Maester. Yeah, it's a great fucking design. If you can find it, we'll put it on the Facebook group. Search for Alien Theorists on Facebook. We're more active on the Facebook group than we ever have been. That place is popping. It is a gold mine of content.
It's fun.
Fun place. Right?
It's fun.
And we don't really post on Facebook itself, but the Facebook group, that's where it's at. Facebook group. And if you're on our Patreon, you don't get access to our Discord server. Bunch of beauties in there. People way cooler than us. It's awesome.
Way cooler.
So if you want to look for our Patreon, you can find the link in the show notes. We appreciate the support. This week's Patreons: Lana K, Mandy Norton, A Full Year Pledge by Sam, Stevie Ray Rosario, Nick Vera, Jim I, Garrett Edwards, Matt Carlson, Lennox went up a tier, Tom Murphy, and Ruben Correria. Thank you very much for supporting the show. We appreciate it.
Oh, and we say keep those eyes on the skies.
Fuck.
See you in after hours.
The fuck.
Most tax pros leave a message.
It's Jane. I'm moving on to a TurboTax expert who beat your price. Adam Devine, tell him how I feel.
Hey, tax pro, she's been thinking twice. Best believe TurboTax will beat your price. This is a tax break.
Switch to a TurboTax live expert and we'll beat what you paid your pro last tax season. Make the switch at TurboTax.com/beatyourprice. TurboTax full service only. Sign up by 12/20/2024 and file by 4/1/2025. Full details at TurboTax.com/beatyourprice.